Now, we have two guests this hour. First of all, Helen Luttrell operates a medical transcription business and serves as a freelance editor and consultant for a major medical publisher. She has also authored 6 medical terminology books, and after undergoing hypnotic regressions following the death of her daughter, Marissa, she began to realize the depth of her involvement with her daughter's roommate, Rachel, who Helen now understands was, in fact, an alien-human hybrid. Helen Luttrell will be our guest this hour. Helen, how are you? Welcome to the program.
Hi, George. How are you?
Good. It's good to have you with us.
It's good to be here, and I want to wish you a happy birthday, too.
Oh, thank you, Helen. Also, Jean Bilodeau is the primary investigator for this case and has worked with Luttrell since 1995. A freelance writer and newspaper correspondent, Bilodeau was a former school teacher and entrepreneur before she began investigating UFOs in 1992. Since that time, she has interviewed more than 250 people who have seen them and has investigated more than 25 cases of cattle mutilations in rural Northern California and in Southern Oregon. Bilodeau reports that hardly a week goes by without the report of another unexplained sighting of a UFO. She's our chief investigator as well and our guest this hour. Hello, Jean. How are you?
Very fine. Thank you.
Good. Good. Let's pick this up, if we can, Jean, with you. If you can give us just an overview of this truly incredible story about Rachel's eyes.
Well, Rachel was a young college student, blind. She needed a little financial help in making the rent payments on her apartment, and a colonel came by with his daughter and offered to pay part of the rent, more than his share or his daughter's share. He was going to live on a military base and just let his daughter get accustomed to enjoying college life. And it appeared that the girl had no past, that she didn't have any favorite songs. She had never had a boyfriend. She didn't know who Simon and Garfunkel were. And Marissa, after a time, became rather suspicious of this. And through some very amazing and interesting events, she started to suspect that perhaps Rachel was not of this earth.
She really felt that.
She did. And then when her mother came to visit and there were some happenings, it more or less confirmed the entire thing.
Okay, and her mother, of course, Helen Luttrell. Helen, when your daughter, Marissa, started talking to you about Rachel, what were some of the first things you thought about?
Well, I knew that that Rachel had to be a really unusual person because, as Jean said, she had no fund of knowledge that a normal teenager would have. But in addition to that, she could only eat a certain food substance that was delivered mysteriously outside their apartment door when they were just about to run out, or when she was just about to run out, and she couldn't drink normal water or soda or anything like that. She could only drink this liquid that came in large jugs, and that was also delivered outside the apartment door. And she always wore a scarf tied around her head and big wraparound sunglasses. And she always dressed in a jumpsuit, which I guess was not all that unusual in the early 70s. People
right.
were dressing in different ways. But her manner of speech was very unusual, too. It was mechanical and just kind of sounded robotic.
What did she look like exactly, Helen? I mean, did she have all human features, or did she look a little unusual?
She looked a little unusual, but almost always she kept herself disguised, even indoors or outdoors, with the sunglasses and the scarf tied around her head. But I had a face-to-face meeting with her one evening in the girl's apartment, and I got a good look at her. And that was when I discovered she probably wasn't from here.
Okay, and this just so many millions of people who are listening right now, this story, based on your perceptions, both of you and your daughters, is an honest-to-goodness story now. We're not talking about a fictional story here, right?
That's correct. No, this is not fiction. This is the truth.
Now, Gene, tell us a little bit about the expose here of a military experiment that you somehow came across.
Well, Helen was able to recall much of this story, just in conscious memory. Then we had the help of Dr. June Steiner, who was very active in OPUS, and she was able to regress Helen. And through these regressions, we learned a little bit more in depth about this, what they call the humanization project. And Rachel, of course, was one of the beings that they were going to try to integrate into society. And as I did the investigation, I came to realize that what better roommate could you have than a blind roommate that wouldn't notice many of the little differences?
Exactly. Exactly. Helen, first of all, our condolences on the loss of your daughter, which, of course, was the main reason why you underwent a hypnotic regression.
Thank you.
As this was occurring, was the hypnotist slash doctor above board with you after each session? Did they say, there's really something strange going on here?
Actually, she didn't. She was absolutely above board. Dr. Steiner is an excellent hypnotherapist, and she took great care to not lead me at all in her questions. And I knew this because I transcribed all the sessions afterwards, so I was fully aware of her questions to me. She never indicated that this was, unusual. I'm sure she thought it was in a way, but actually she's an experiencer herself and an abductee. So she understood exactly where I was coming from.
Helen, tell us a little bit more about this Air Force colonel, if you would.
Okay. He enlisted in 1955 and went through the usual basic training and then on to a specialized school that would prepare him for his assignment to Four Corners, which was a secret military base. It's not the geographic Four Corners that everyone is familiar with, like in the corner of Utah and Nevada and New Mexico, whatever that is.
Right.
But this one was a secret base that was not supposed to exist. And actually, it was located a little bit north of Area 51. And so he was assigned there, and his job was to go out and help retrieve crashed space vehicles and their occupants. And eventually he went to this crash that where he got Rachel. In this particular crash, the other occupants were killed on impact, and the craft started to burn. And he thought that he could see a movement inside one of the windows. And so he went in and found this small, what he took to be a female entity. And he picked her up and took her out as quickly as he could, and they took her to the dispensary, and she had a little cut on her arm, but that was all. And immediately he felt a bond with her, and he wanted to keep her, and so did the nurses that were there at the dispensary. And so the next day he called his headquarters and asked if that was going to be possible. And they radioed right back and told him that, yes, it was possible, but he had to adopt her and raise her as his own daughter. And kind of surprisingly to himself even, he did agree to do that, and that was the start of the relationship with Rachel.
Yet he basically covered up, of course, her background, how he found her for a long time.
Oh, yeah.
How were you able to find this out about him and about what happened? I mean, were these stories that Rachel told Marissa at the time? How did this all come out where you really knew what this colonel was doing and who he was?
Well, I don't think the two girls talked too much about it in depth. But after I had my face-to-face meeting with Rachel, it became apparent to Rachel and to her father that they needed to come forth with a story of exactly what she was and how he had acquired her. And so shortly after that meeting, my daughter arranged a meeting at the girl's apartment with the colonel and me and the two girls. And so we all sat down, and he started to relate this story to me verbally. And he told me the first part of it, as far as going into the service and the training school and everything. But then it was as though I had a gigantic download in my mind. It was like a giant computer file that was downloaded, and all of a sudden I had all that information.
What made you believe his story?
Well, I'm not exactly sure, except that he was very kind to his daughter and very kind to mine, and it seemed like a plausible story to account for acquiring someone like Rachel, who obviously was not from here.
Did he ask you at the time, please don't tell anybody this, I'm telling you this in confidence, or because what did he expect you to do once you found out about this?
I'm not sure what he expected me to do, but he didn't tell me at the time not to tell anyone.
How old would Rachel be now?
She would probably be 48 to 52, somewhere around there. No, let's say she would be 50 to 55, probably.
Any idea where she might be, Helen?
I was led to believe from the regressions that she was disposed of by some of the higher members of the Humanization Project.
Now, what do you mean disposed of? They killed her?
Yes. She was thrown down a flight of stairs.
Oh, my God. And I assume the colonel now has passed on?
That I don't know. I wasn't able to retrieve any information, really, one way or the other on that. He would be of age where he could have passed on, very likely.
Jean, in your research and your work with Helen, did Rachel fully understand who she was and where she may have come from?
It appears that she did, and she was frustrated. Frustrated by not being able to relate as well as she wanted to and everything. One thing that we've kind of left out is that when Rachel stumbled, and when Helen caught her, her sleeve came up, and Helen felt her arm, and it felt like cool
and spongy, and
like spongy, like mushrooms. And then her glasses fell forward off of her face, and Helen was able to look into Rachel's eyes.
What did they look like?
Oh, go ahead, Helen.
Okay, they were really large, and they sort of went around onto her temples and ended in a point upward. They slanted upward somewhat and ended in a point. But the main thing was that they were an avocado green, the light green that's the inside of an avocado.
Yes.
And they did not have pupils as we do. She had vertical black slits.
Did that scare you when you saw that?
Initially it did. I was just overwhelmed, but I got my composure in a couple of seconds, and then I realized that as I kept staring into her eyes, that she was the one that was really frightened, and I felt that she was really upset because apparently her cover had been blown.
All right, let's talk about the humanization project as well when we come right back. This is just an absolutely staggering story. I'm George Norrie, back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. I'm George Norrie. Two guests this hour. One, of course, Helen Luttrell, whose late daughter knew Rachel, the purported hybrid, her daughter, Helen's daughter, Marissa. And then Jean Bilodeau, she's the primary investigator on this particular case. Helen or Jean, whichever one of you thinks you should take this question, this humanization project, did you find out more about it later on as you began to look into the situation about Rachel?
Yes, we did. We, under the regression, Helen was able to recall certain things. And I want to say that the regressions that she underwent weren't like the ones on TV.
How so?
They were much more intense, very emotional. And June Steiner and I had gone through all of the questions for about 6 weeks before these sessions that we wanted to explore certain areas. And we made sure none of them were leading or anything like this. But there were times when Helen said, no, I don't want to do this. I don't want to talk about it. Or I'm afraid. And June would back off and we would gently ease Helen into this again. And it was just incredibly emotional. And in the book, we do include a couple of full-length transcripts of these sessions. And during one of these, it came out that Helen had been taken to the Four Corners facility by the colonel at a later date. And this was one of the few events that Helen didn't recall consciously.
And why is that, though, Jean? Why did Helen have a loss of memory with some of these events?
I think they were just too emotional for her. There were things being shown to her that she didn't want to see. And this is what alerted us to certain areas, such as looking into Rachel's eyes when the glasses fell off. The story made perfect sense to Helen, but when you listen to it, there were holes in the story. And when we explored that by the regressions, she didn't want to talk about it. And then gently we worked her through that she didn't just look into Rachel's eyes, that something happened when she did. And it brought forth, Rachel took her someplace at that time. And this was very frightening to her.
This hybrid breeding program, does it include human babies? Did it include merely human eggs? How did it work?
Sometimes it was the egg, and sometimes it was an embryo that was retrieved and taken to, I don't know where, but apparently to a laboratory, likely on a spaceship, because I was taken there one time by Rachel, and I think that's what Jean was referring to, or one of the things she was. And I was shown a room that had stacks of aquariums. It looked like aquariums, but there were no fish in these aquariums. They were fetuses in various stages of development, and they were swimming around in this greenish liquid, and they were kind of greenish orange looking too, and they didn't look human. And Rachel indicated that they would like to have me help take care of those beings, whatever they were. And I was so horrified, I told her I could not do that. And at that time she told me it didn't really matter what I wanted, but I still refused. And then she indicated that I could have another job assigned to me, and that would be of an educator. And I told her I couldn't do that either because I had no credentials. I was thinking of a teacher, being a teacher. Mm-hmm. And she said, no, the way that I would be an educator would be to tell this story.
At what point, or if at any point, did you find out, Helen or Eugene, what this breeding program, this humanization program was all about? Did we ever find out why they were doing this?
The only reason that I could find out was that they were raising these hybrid beings to be integrated at a later time into society to see how well they would fit in, because some did and some had not fit in very well.
What was so special about them that they had to genetically alter them or create hybrids with them? I mean, there must have been a reason why they were altering, why they didn't want just a full 100% human being, for example, on this planet.
Well, the thing was, the hybrids were coming from another planet and trying to fit into our society, and in the past, that it hadn't been a very good success rate because of different reasons. They look different, for one thing, and Rachel's looks weren't really too bad. But the amount of emotions that they would eventually get was sort of questionable, too, because they weren't supposed to have too many emotions, but they had to have enough so that they could fit in. And it was a very, very difficult program, and they had a lot of failures, I think.
Well, did we ever find out, though, why they were doing this? I mean, were they trying to take over this planet with hybrids? What was the goal?
I'm not sure of the ultimate goal, but
somewhat to strengthen their race.
Yes, that was part of the reason. But it seemed that they wanted a lot of them to be here on this planet, too.
Did we ever find out what star system they might have come from?
It was a Zeta Reticuli, as far as I know.
Helen, when you underwent your hypnotic regressions, am I correct in assuming you were doing it because of the true tragedy and the sadness over your daughter's loss? Is that why you did this?
Partially, but because it had really bothered me all of these years, this mystery about Rachel, because I only knew certain things that I could recall, and I just knew that there had to be more to the story.
Okay.
And I hadn't wanted to write anything while my daughter was alive because of the publicity it would bring her family. But once she had passed, I thought that maybe it was the time for me to get into this.
Do you believe that this humanization program is still underway?
Yes. Yes, I do. And I can't give you any concrete reason, but I do believe it.
How many of these hybrids do you think might be on this planet right now?
Probably 5% of the population.
Of the planet?
Mm-hmm.
So let's see, we've got 6 billion people. We're talking about 300 million people.
What do you think, Gene? Am I high on that?
I don't know.
I don't really know either, but there are a lot of them, a lot more than people are aware.
See, one of the problems with this story and why it was so emotional was that Helen has had several miscarriages. And then the reasons for these miscarriages came out through the regressions.
Tell me about that.
Go ahead, Helen.
Oh, okay. Well, in one or two of them, one in particular, I remember being taken to a doctor's office in a town where I had lived years and years ago, and I was supposed to be just there for a checkup, and I was pregnant at the time, and it wasn't a normal checkup. I had a big bright light over my head, and it wasn't the normal white light that they have usually in the doctor's office. This was one that sort of hypnotized me in a way, or I was just out of it completely for a few minutes. And as I started to come back to consciousness, I remember
hearing them talk about something they had taken out of me, and I hurt really bad in my pelvic area. And they had taken an embryo from me. And they were talking that, you know what to do with this. And I do believe that it was taken and used in an experiment.
Is it possible that Rachel also might have been your daughter?
Very possible. I don't know that for sure, but I believe so. In retrospect, because of the way that the girls were brought together to live together, and just the whole sense of the regressions, I really do believe that.
And the way they were sharing information with you.
Yes.
Because I assume they weren't sharing this with the rest of the population.
I don't think so. Especially in the early 70s, it was hard to find anybody that wanted to listen to this sort of talk.
Did the colonel ever elaborate on just how widespread this operation was in Nevada?
No, he didn't. He didn't.
Gene, go ahead.
He didn't really share any more information, it seems, than he really had to, other than what related exactly to him and Rachel. It was a compartmentalized situation, pretty much, at that time.
Gene, of all the UFO cases you have investigated and all the people, how would you categorize this story?
This one is right up there at the very top, perhaps in the top two or three. This one is the most in-depth that I've ever gone into. One of the things that made this so touching was that after this disclosure in this little meeting they had with each other, the girls became pretty good friends, and they had each wanted a sister, and they got a sister, although I don't know if they knew they were really partially sisters or not. But one day Marissa came home from school, and she walked into her apartment, and she looked around, and all trace of Rachel was gone. And she walked around the house, walked into the bedroom, and she looked around, and she saw a note taped to the mirror. And she walked over, and she picked it up, and then went over and sat on the bed, and she read it. And it was a note just that said, you know, you have been my only friend, and I have enjoyed our times together so much, and I have left you a gift. And Marissa just sat there, and she said, well, there's nothing left in this house. What could the gift be?
Right.
It took her about 10 minutes to figure out what the gift was, and that was the gift of sight.
She gave her the gift of sight?
Yes.
It was not complete sight, but it was so much better than what it had been before.
Helen, how long had Marissa been blind?
Probably, let's see, about five or six years. And she was totally blind.
What happened? She had some kind of a degenerative eye disease? How did it occur?
It was as a result of diabetes.
Oh, my.
And it was retinal degeneration.
When she went back to the doctor, after some of her vision was coming back, because of possibly Rachel's help, what did the doctor say?
She only went a few times. They couldn't explain it at that time. Previous to that, she had had a couple of laser treatments, but they weren't successful at all, so she was resigned to a life of more or less blindness. And her sight did fluctuate somewhat, but it was never really good.
How old was Marissa when she passed?
38.
She was 38. And then I assume way before that, Rachel was gone out of her life?
Oh, yeah. She was gone in late 72, wasn't it, Jean?
Yes.
Yes.
The other interesting thing was not only the vision, and which really enabled Marissa to complete college and do most of her work for a master's degree, but it also, some way, she got the gift of precognition, and this caused Marissa a great deal of pain in her life because she was able to see events, tragic events, that were about to happen, and there was nothing she could do about it. And perhaps Helen could explain about the one family.
Yes, at one time I got a phone call from her, and she was really concerned that she had had an out-of-body experience and had seen on a real remote location in Northern California, on an old dirt road, very remote, a family of six who had been murdered. There was a mother and the father and four children. And she knew that it had not happened, or she didn't think that it happened yet. And she wanted to know what I thought, if she should go to the police and tell them. And we discussed whether that was a wise move, because sometimes if you do that, then you're classified as a suspect if you know about a murder that's going to happen. And she didn't tell anyone about it except her husband and me. And then a week or so later, it really happened, right at the same location that she had told me about. And she was very, very upset over that. And I was, too, because I felt that maybe I had given her the wrong advice, but still, there wouldn't have been anything that anyone could have done.
How tall was Rachel?
Rachel was about 5'4" or 5".
Okay, about 5'4". She is, as you said, she had like a spongy feel to her arms. That you wouldn't have known that, I guess, unless you had grabbed her.
Yes.
did she possess any special physical gifts? I mean, was she lightning fast if she ran or anything like that?
No, she was not coordinated enough. I doubt if she could have run very well. She just was. She moved sort of stiffly and didn't seem graceful like most people are. At the time that she fell and I caught her, she just fell directly over. She was just going to fall on her face, and that's why I reached out to catch her. But her speech was very stiff and mechanical, too. It was just, it sounded like this, but not even that much inflection.
Do you remember the last time you saw her?
Yes, I do. That was the time that she took me, I guess we would call it an abduction, to see these creatures in the aquarium setting, and wanted me to take care of them, and that's when I refused, and she told me that I could be the educator about this story.
Well, now, you've written an incredible story, both of you together, called Rachel's Eyes, The Strange But True Story of a Human-Alien Hybrid. Your website is linked up right now at coasttocoastam.com. Any other way people can get this book? Is it out in bookstores or anything like that?
It's available at amazon.com or fifthworld.com.